Hello everyone, welcome to another Footmarks episode. I'm Varun and I'm joined by Jared as always. So today's episode of Footmarks is on, I guess, the missed opportunities. And I assume this is Test cricket. I don't know if we're doing all of cricket, but
it's, we're doing Test cricket, right?
So it's like, so I guess it would be easier for us to just explain what we mean, I think, once we start talking about it. So Jared, I think of all the topics we talk about this video, I think there's only one you've actually done a proper piece on, and that's India on ranked earners. The reason I wanted to start with this is because I think with everything else in this video, what's done is done. This is technically something that could still apply in the future. So your theory with India was that on ranked earners, India rarely used their second seamer. So they, you could make an argument. They could only have gone in with three spinners. I think that's maybe slightly wrong, but I do think you were onto something where it's like, if you're barely using your second seamer, could you not bring in another spin bowling all-rounder for him? Or just bring in another specialist batter, right?
Yeah, I think that's where it came from, of they weren't using, like the whole point of a cricket team is to use all the different parts for as much as you need them for, right? So that they all push towards a win. And in Asia, there are many different times when the second seamer is not doing anything, right? And it's not just India. You can make that claim in Sri Lanka and other countries as well. And it's like, why do we have two seam bowlers if most teams are going to open the bowling with a spinner anyway? It doesn't make sense. It would be different if the combined total of those seam bowlers was like 45 overs a game. Then you'd be like, well, that's too many. Then we need to bring it down. But some of those matches, it's like the combined total of the seamers is like 25 overs. Like, it doesn't make any sense to have a second bowler there unless they're so different. Like, let's say one was a new ball specialist and one's an old ball specialist. Then you're like, okay, we need two. But in India's case, they got Bumrah, right? So they didn't need the secondary bowler at all. So I think it's definitely, you know, the way that I look at this is there is the conventions of cricket sometimes stop teams from using what they have to maximize their talent.
Yeah, definitely. I think you were talking about over, like, let's say having different skills. I think India, you did this piece during the BGT in 23. At that point, you also had Mohammad Shami and Umesh Yadav, and all of the, even including Bumrah, they all like the old ball.
Yeah.
So if you're playing two of them, they contradict each other, right? It's like they're going up against each other. I think it's also partly why sometimes Siraj's numbers don't look as good in India with Bumrah, because it's like if the ball is reversing, India just give the ball to Bumrah, right? So I also, just to be clear, like if the pitches are obviously like what we saw versus West Indies recently or versus England last year, absolutely play two seamers. But there were some of those pitches where I think India's percentage of seam bowled was like less than 15%. It's like, what are you doing playing the second seamer? And that's also at the same point where India's batting was hella fragile, Jared. They were constantly like 120 for five and six in that era, and depended on the Jadeja, Akshar and Ashwin trio to bail them out, right? It wasn't like, I'm pretty sure, like, I think Akshar Patel was the best batter in that 2023 BGT, right? He was batting out what, nine in that series?
Yeah, exactly. So if you're going to do that, right, why not just pick the extra batter? And I think that's where this conversation sort of started from, of are there sort of historical precedents where teams have a particular kind of talent pool or particular kind of pitches where you should be playing the game very, very differently than everywhere else, right? Like, I think it isn't at Gaul where teams still take two spinners in at Gaul, like, very regularly. And it's like, well, I think in domestic cricket, it's like something like 75% of the overs are bowled by spin. What do you think the second seamer's going to do, guys? Like, what's your thinking here? So in that, you also need little things like you need someone, a spinner who's good at bowling with a new ball and everything else. But India had all those bases covered, and they have a player in their 11 that isn't doing much. Now, the argument could be that if you have only one seamer in and he gets injured, that causes a bigger option. But teams go into games with one spinner all the time, right? Like, I don't know if that really backs up what we're talking about. But again, if the seamer isn't doing much, what is that? Even if you have no seamers in your side, does it matter all that much? So I just think that teams are not maximizing the way that they can win games because everyone is sort of locked into the way that cricket should be played rather than a better system for something like this.
Yeah, the opposite of what we were talking about is Australia and the BGT in Australia, right? It's like they kept picking Lyon in all five test matches where it's like he did nothing for most of it. So they're like, maybe MCG was, I think, the closest where I'm like, okay, there is some value in bowling spin, right?
I think we looked this up. I think I did a piece for The Cricketer. I was like, Lyon's not bowling, right? So What do you think you're getting out of Nathan Lyon at this stage that you wouldn't get out of Bo Webster's off spin, right? Like, I'm not saying that Bo Webster's anywhere near as good as Lyon, but if Lyon's not bowling, you might as well just say to Bo Webster, can you bowl 20 overs a spin again? And just hold up an end and all the quicks will take the wickets at the other end. So it's a perfect example, again, of just not using your talent correctly and not understanding the best way to maximize your chances of winning games.
Yeah, so I think this is like still, and I think it's still important we talk about this now because India might still have ranked centers in the future. Like, even though they might not want to do it, it might not be like a team, a whole wide director, but
hey, the conversation cases, might be Pakistan, right? If Pakistan are going to do the wickets that they've got, it might make sense for Pakistan to have this conversation, right? Rather than India or Sri Lanka, right? Like, it doesn't matter who the team is, it depends on your pitches and your talent.
Yeah, so I was just saying, so with India, let's say like even if BCCI is like, cool, we want sporting pitches. Like, do you remember the indoor pitch in 2023, Jared? The absolute shithole, right? So what I believe what happens was that test match was supposed to happen somewhere else and they moved it last minute to indoor. And I believe the directors make it spin friendly and the groundsman didn't have a lot of time. So in an attempt to make it spin friendly, it became a nuclear wasteland. So knowing, I think we've seen with both the Men's World Cup and the Women's World Cup, the BCCI, useless at organizing games. So I can 100% imagine a situation in the future where a test match might be moved last minute and India face a ranked turner without actually wanting to face it. So if that does occur, so in this current lineup, let's say we don't have Ashwin anymore. Could India go with, I don't know, let's say, I'll just make a top seven, right? You have KL, Jaiswal, Sai, Gill, let's say Pant, you have Jurel at six, Sarfraz seven, Jadeja, I'm forgetting Washington, and Akshar and Kuldeep, or like Kuldeep and Bumrah, something along those lines. You're still getting a lot of batting. And if you are going to be on a ranked turner, you don't really need that fifth bowling option.
No, and I think this is the really interesting thing, actually, that the world is kind of obsessed by all-rounders and how they change your team. But no one ever uses them in this kind of way, which is it's very hard to have a team where you have five bowling options in Asia and you use them because spinners bowl so much of the overs. And Ashwin can bowl 55 to 60 overs, right? Jadeja can bowl 55 to 60 overs. Harat can bowl 55 to 60 overs. How are you fitting in the fifth bowler? Do you remember there was a guy, India used a guy, and you remember his name. I want to say Jitesh Sharma, but is that right?
Jayant Yadav?
Jayant Yadav, that's who I mean.
The Shahbaz Nadeem.
I knew it started with a J, but they used him, and my memory of it was they didn't know how to bowl him, because how did they get him on? And there was early games in Washi, when Washi played, and Ashwin had one. Anytime you needed a tall off spinner, they had a tall off spinner. So why would they need a second one?
Whereas from memory, like Jayant Yadav and Washington Sundar were basically specialist batters at like eight
exactly.
in the games they played.
And so it's different if you have Kuldeep, Akshar and Washi, because those are three different spinners. So there is different tactical reasons to use all three of them, right? Or take out Akshar and put Ravi Jadeja in there, sorry. But whatever angle you want. But there have been times when Akshar has played with Jadeja when it's like, how do we even bowl both of these guys? Because they both need the same end at the same time against the same kind of batters, right? And so realistically, again, it's like, well, if that's the case and you know it, can you not? I think I said in one of those pieces that India could have gone in with three specialist bowlers, right? They had the ability, if they wanted to go in with Ashwin, Jadeja and Bumrah and not even need another bowler, right? That's it. You're done, right? Ashwin and Jadeja are just going to bowl nonstop from one end, right? And then Bumrah will come on occasionally when they think the ball will reverse or with a new ball, right? And that's it. Job done. Now, the argument against that is injury. And I think I made it in that piece. But then you could say that why do you ever need five bowling options in Asia? Four bowling options is the absolute most you ever need in Asian conditions, because the spinners bowl 50 to 55 overs each, right? Like, you know, that's so much of the game. The game's almost done once you do that. So I think that's something that's really worth thinking about in the future. And maybe it changes the way that we think about how team selections are done for Asia.
Yeah, so the other thing you were suggesting was if you do want a second seamer, I think at that point you suggested Hardik. But so now if the India wants second seamer, they could play Nitish as a second seamer, though I don't think they trust his bowling yet, right?
Mm. And then you just have him as a backup in the side, right? And he bats wherever he needs to bat, and you can do that. And then you've got the batting further down. I think that, again, is a perfectly acceptable way of doing it. So I do think that I think we can, and I've seen this with first-class cricket before. First-class cricket's a lot more risky with its selections. You see teams in first-class cricket that are sometimes a little bit, you know, out there. And I think you can get away with those sorts of things in first-class cricket, whereas in test cricket, everyone's like, I can't believe they picked this side. So I think you can, I think you can go about this. And that's kind of what we're talking about here, that what teams in history have had the flexibility to be able to do random different kinds of selections based on their team.
Yeah, so I think we talked about, let's say, India maybe reducing the fifth bowler to having four bowlers. Let's do the opposite now, right? From 1990 to 2007-ish, Australia had barely played the fifth bowler, right? This is one of the things that really annoyed you. I think that's this specific topic is what triggered this whole conversation is, if you have Adam Gilchrist, why did you not bat him at six and play like an Ian Harvey at seven?
Yeah.
Right? That's where this whole thing started. Could they not have become an even better team? Or did they even need it?
Yeah, I think, just to go through Ian Harvey's record, so he's known as a white ball cricketer, right? And Ian Harvey in first class cricket averages 35 with the bat with 15 hundreds, high score of 209. With the ball, he took 425 wickets at 27.5, right? But Ian Harvey in test cricket is probably less of a wicket taker and just an incredibly low economy type of guy, right? You also have Brendan Julian that you could have used in this role if you wanted something slightly different. Shane Lee for a period of time could have also done this role. There's a couple of other guys like Sean Young.
Shane Watson? Could they have used Shane Watson, or was he injured by then?
Young Shane Watson would have been a perfect example of someone who, again, could have batted at number seven. They bring him into the side and he could have done it. Shane Watson would have probably taken over from Ian Harvey in this role. So you can argue that they didn't. It wasn't like they were keeping Keith Miller out the side, right? Because if someone was like Keith Miller, he would have come in. But Ian Harvey has proved with 8,000 first-class runs and 400 first-class wickets that he was an absolutely fine red ball player across two different countries. He's also a very smart player and he is a very adaptable player. If he needed to bowl for economy, he would. If he needed to bowl for wickets, he would. And as a batter, he could hammer the ball. So you're still getting, I don't think Ian Harvey is like a worse batter than Ian Healy. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, in fact, he's a way better batter than Ian Healy. And Ian Healy batted at number seven all, you know, during Ian Harvey's career, right? So if you change that side around and you just go in with that, now you can use Glenn McGrath and Shane Warne in more attacking ways, whereas sometimes Australia use those as stock bowlers, right? You've got two of the greatest attacking bowlers in the history of the game being used as stock bowlers. Brett Lee and Sean Tate become a lot more dangerous in that kind of situation because now they can bowl four over spells just when you need them, right? And Jason Gillespie's body is falling apart. And Damien Fleming's body was falling apart. You had the ability to be able to use those guys without them bowling 35 overs in a game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ian Harvey gives you such flexibility in that side. Now, I say all this as a guy who has a signed Ian Harvey shirt, and I was a big fan of this as a kid. But I'm coming back to this. As a kid, I was just like, he probably deserves a test match because of how good he is in first-class cricket. Now I'm looking at it going, why did they never move Gilchrist one position? Like, it doesn't even make any sense, right? Because it makes you such a more dynamic side. And why would you want Warner McGrath bowling that many overs when you've got a guy who would have gone at about 2.5 runs and over, right, in test cricket? Like, you know, I think his economy was slightly higher in first-class cricket, but he bowled a little bit more attacking. I don't have his economy for Victoria, but I've seen him bowl 20-over spells for, like, 30 runs a lot of times, where Victoria would just attack from the other end and just be like, the game isn't going anywhere because Harvey is bowling. We're just going to attack from the other end. Australia could have done the same thing. And the weird thing is, right, this is what is stupid about this, Varun. They eventually do this after Ian Harvey and Adam Gilchrist have gone, and they bat Andrew McDonald. They bring Andrew McDonald into the side, who's a shitter version of Ian Harvey when they don't have Gilchrist anymore, right? So they eventually move to that thinking. Now, I think some of the reason that Australia doesn't do this, and let's work through this properly, is that in Warne and McGrath, you have two guys who love bowling, right? Long spells and everything else. So there is an element of you have two great strike bowlers who also two great stock bowlers at the same time. But as I said, it's the other bowlers, I think, make it more interesting. That sort of, you know, having to use Colin Miller with his medium pace sometimes when he was in the side, whereas like if you have Ian Harvey, you don't need Colin Miller bowling medium pace for you, right? You know, you've got that option available for you. It helps with Gillespie. It helps with Fleming. It helps with Lee. It helps with Tate. So I think it helps more with the other bowlers. So I can understand why they didn't do it. But I just think if you take out the number six batter in that situation and you have Ian Harvey at number seven, and as you said, then Shane Watson is number seven, I think that is a better side than the great Australian teams that we have seen, because it is more flexible and has more talent. And because there's so much Langer, Hayden, Ponting. Martin, Mark Waugh, Steve Waugh,
Mike Hussey,
pick your guys at the top order ahead of them. Why do you need someone averaging 50 and number seven? Brian Lara used pot plants to work on his placement. John Wright glued his glove to his bat. Sachin Tendulkar dug up practice pitches. Tatenda Taibu cut the top off his bat. Claire Taylor used a hockey grip. Steve Smith was from tennis. Dean Jones would call phantom runs. And Victor Trumper turned the Nets into a war zone to survive. The best batters in the world do whatever they have to make runs. We have told their stories in our new book, The Art of Batting.
I also think, I believe they played Andrew Simons for like 20 odd test matches for his bowling, I think.
Partly because he's bowling.
I think no one has rated Simons more than both of us in ODIs and T20s. But like, I don't think his bowling surely is like not good enough in test cricket, right? I think if he was a better batter, like I think I'd love his bowling as a sixth bowling option. Not as this fifth bowler, I reckon.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at it, they had a lot of... if Steve Waugh was fit all the way through his career, I don't think you need Ian Harvey or Shane Watson in these sorts of positions that we're talking about, right? That team is really good because I think both of us like Steve Waugh's early bowling career. Mm-hmm. He's a good fifth bowling option, I think. But in specifically, you're right, in once he's not playing, so Simons takes a wicket a game at an average of 37, and I reckon he took I think they used him still as more of a sixth bowler, but in the fifth bowler position. Like, he didn't bowl a lot of deliverers. So all he's really doing, Simons, is probably taking over the Mark Waugh role of that sort of when you need an extra bowler, you know, you use Mark Waugh or you use Andrew Simons. They're both fine, but they're not what Ian Harvey is. Ian Harvey is probably 25 to 30 overs a game, if you want. Like, I'm trying to compare. Ian Harvey is, I think, a slightly better Colin de Grandhomme, right? Mm-hmm. With the ball, maybe not quite as good as Colin de Grandhomme with the bat. If you put Colin de Grandhomme in that Australian team, right, I just think you're a much better side. I just think you're instantly a much better side if you do that. So I think the Australian team could have been better if they'd done that. So I'm not just saying it from a flexibility point of view, but here's the question, Varun. We're saying they could be better. We could be wrong. But why wouldn't you use that flexibility when you could use it? Why just stop using it altogether? That's what I don't
think.
Get.
They needed this fifth bowler. There's a few test matches where they miss one of Warner McGrath. So I think it's the Bordagawaskar Trophy in 2003, 2004 comes to mind. Horrible pitches, right?
Couldn't take any wickets.
You don't have your two best bowlers. Let's say like Warner versus India wasn't as big a factor. I think it's fair enough to say because they played him well. McGrath missing is quite good. And whatever reason, whoever the backup bowlers came in just couldn't come close to replicating what he did, right? And the other thing, so that's the one series I was thinking where I'm like, okay, they really needed the fifth bowler. There's also, I don't know if you remember, there's a series when New Zealand comes to Australia, they draw like three test matches, right?
Yeah, 2001, is it?
Yeah, one or 2002. The other one is where I think they needed the fifth bowler is the 2005 Ashes, where McGrath was injured, Warne did everything on his own. Their third and fourth bowlers, who regardless of who they played, were torn to pieces, right? That's when they desperately needed someone else in that team who could give them something. Because if you compare...
I reckon Ian Harvey's done by then. I reckon if that same thing happens in 2001, I think you're right, and Ian Harvey comes straight in. And I'm not sure that they felt confident enough with Shane Watson to do that role. But you're right. I think all three of those are perfect examples of times when they could have done it. But also, in Asia... they could have taken Ian Harvey as the second seamer at times, right? And used some extra spinners. Now, you could argue that they didn't always have them. But there's a period of time where they have, I would argue, near peak Ian Harvey as a player. And they have Colin Miller, right? And if you put Colin Miller's bowling and Ian Harvey's bowling into a side and Ian Harvey's batting, that gives them extra seam bowling and extra spin bowling in the same game, right? Without losing much with the bat again. So I think you're right. I think there are definite times when they could have made that decision. And Gilchrist didn't want to bat at number six, right? But Gilchrist batted at number five domestically. There's like, this is not a guy who'd batted at number seven his entire life. He didn't grow up batting at number seven, did he? He's Adam Gilchrist. He opened the batting in ODI cricket and he batted at number five domestically, right? So you're not talking about someone who'd only ever batted at number seven and had flukish numbers. He's not Dennis Lindsay. No one else. No one. Only Tim Wigmore and I are going to get that reference. But, you know, this is someone who could have done that. So again, I think someone needed to have a conversation with Gilchrist and be like, you need to do this. Kumar Sangakkara, that's such a name drop, but he told me that he would take the gloves back up when it would help with the flexibility of Sri Lanka's team, right? Now, he didn't want a wicketkeep later on in his career, but he was like, if we needed an extra bowler in the side, all right, or, you know, needed to change the team, it makes more sense for me to take the gloves and it, just on occasion, and we can change our lineup. At Australia, I can't think of a test match where Australia batted Gilchrist at number six for an entire test match outside of, I think there might be a test match where Sean Young plays. And that was because Sean Young wasn't supposed to be in that squad and he came in as a last minute replacement because there weren't many fit Australian players in the country, right? Like it was something like that, Varun. And maybe Gilchrist lined up at number six in the first innings in that game. But I can't think of many other times in his entire career where Gilchrist did that. And it's like, why have one of the most dynamic cricketers in the history of the game and use him in such a one-dimensional way? Like, they used him like he wasn't an all-rounder when he was an all-rounder.
Yeah, so the one test they do it is Shane Watson plays in 2005 versus Pakistan, where Gilchrist does bat at six, but he only bats at once. But they win by nine wickets, we don't see him bat twice. So
that's a perfect example of, what year did you say that was?
That is Jan 2nd, 2005.
And what did you say they should have been doing that same time?
They're exactly that, right? Playing another all-rounder.
Right. I'm just going to have a look at Andrew McDonald as well. Let's see if I can just bring up his record here as well, because I think that's a fascinating one too, because you've got a situation with McDonald where I'm pretty sure, 2009. So it's obviously after Gilchrist. So he bats at six. Yeah. So he bats at six. So again, they're doing that thing of not moving their wicketkeeper at all. Right. Now, I've watched McDonald and Haddon play a lot of cricket in my life. I would have thought that they were pretty even as batters. But you're bringing in McDonald, who is inexperienced, right, to bat at number six, when the smarter option in that is to move him up, is move Haddon up one spot, who's played a lot more, has been playing, you know, has been around the system for a little bit. Although, to be fair, Haddon might not have played a lot of cricket at that point either. So they're still showing, even when McDonald comes in, they're looking for the flexibility, but they're not actually using the flexibility of the wicketkeeper. Right, the wicketkeeper cannot move, Varun, because they have decided that wicketkeepers bat at number seven. And this is what's fascinating about this is, traditionally, wicketkeepers did not bat at number seven. It's a new thing that doesn't even need to exist. There's no reason why he couldn't bat at number five like Andy Flower did, right? Like, I'm not saying you would use Gilchrist that way, but you could have. And at the same time, they're playing against England. And where does Matt Prior bat?
Six, right? Is it assumed?
Quite a lot at number six. So they're seeing an opposition player do it and they're not even...
Well, Prior wasn't there in 05, was he?
No.
Or do you mean like late career? Like, do you mean like 2009 Australia?
Yeah. No, oh, you're okay. Right. I suppose that's right. But they played against Alex Stewart, Andy Flower, Kumar Sangakkara. They played against lots of wicketkeepers who batted higher up in the order.
I feel like India had a couple of keepers who opened for some reason. I don't know why.
Yes, in the 90s. I don't know if that worked particularly well, but no. Yes.
that's the other side of going too rogue, I think.
Yeah, but this is my thing. I think Australia had one of the most dynamic weapons in the history of Test cricket, and they used him in one way. And it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, so I think similar time period. I think you were talking about this on a similar note. Could India also done something similar, right? Their best batters were probably like better than Australia's best batters, but maybe like the worst batter was worse than Australia's is the best way I would put it. At the very least, India had, you had Sachin, Dravid, Sehwag, Lakshman and Ganguly, right? So that's still like, that's three all-time greats, yeah. I think. One who's very close to being an all-time great, and one who's very good. Right, that's a very like good luxury to have. So you have four batters who somewhere like average somewhere between 45 and 55 in Test cricket, right? And then could they also not have compromised on the additional batting position for like another bowler? That's what you were saying, right?
Yeah. So I would love to know when those five players played in a Test match at home, what their win percentage was. Right. I'm assuming it was a lot of draws, not many wins, and a few losses in that period, right? And if that's the case, surely the option then is to take more wickets, right?
Mm.
So again, I don't know if you can do that with Ganguly away from home. I don't know. I'm talking about away from Asia anyway. But in Asia, I would have argued that with those five batters, I don't care who the other opening player, you know, throw in Rand, Akash Chopra, Wasim Jaffa, Irfan Pathan, I don't care who it is, right? You're going to make a lot of runs with that side. And so the way to win test matches is by taking wickets. Can you not bring in someone else who is going to help you take more wickets and make sure that you have a genuine four or five bowlers that have the option of winning you the game, knowing that you're going to make runs more often than not with that lineup?
So I have the numbers for you. When all five played in India,
yep.
They played 17 test matches together. They won six and lost one and drew 10.
So they weren't losing games. I would argue that under my system, they might lose more than one, right?
Yeah.
But you can't tell me that the extra bowler doesn't help them win more games. And if you think about, I'm trying to think of when Venkatapati Raju's career kind of finishes.
I assume that would be the 2001 BGT, no?
So surely they had the option of picking, and there would be other spinners as well. I'm just using him as an example I've now lost his career. Venkatapati Raju plays his last test match in 2001, right? But he plays his last first class game in 2004. So they've got 3 years of what I would say is Harbhajan, Kumble, and Venkatapati Raju. And I'm missing other spinners here, right? There would be other spinners, but that's a left arm finger spinner, a leg spinner, and an off spinner that they could have played in every single game if they are willing to be a little bit more flexible on the batting. All round, where they would argue back a little bit would probably be that they don't have maybe an Irfan Pathan type player, right? But I'm saying, is it worth actually not even being a good batting side at number seven, right? And knowing that you have Sachin and Sehwag and Dravid and Laxman in that side and Ganguly at home, knowing that you have an extra bowler that you could swing around more often than not. Now, we'd have to go, there's a bunch of uncles now that are really upset because they remember every single lineup from this period. They're like, they did do this. But the point being is, again, I think there is a lack of flexibility in the way they have thought about how they could have used that side because they had one of the greatest batting lineups of all time.
Yeah, so I think Irfan Pathan debuts in 2003 and he mainly bats at 8. So I think we were talking about this, right? So I guess the other counter argument would be prior 2005, the wicketkeeper just could not bat. Right. So,
yeah.
So if you have a wicketkeeper who averages like 25 to 30, I completely would get the argument that if you have a wicketkeeper batter who averages 25 to 30 and Irfan Pathan who might average 25 to 30, that might be too much. That might be compromising the batting way too much in that regard. Right. But I think once Dhoni comes,
if you're not winning the games already,
that argument.
Yeah. But if you're not winning the games already, would be my question. Right. If you're, mm-hmm. if at home, if you're winning 6 out of 17 games,
yeah.
Right. what you're doing is already not working.
So the other argument is we know for a fact India has historically been very conservative.
Yeah, there's no way India would have done this.
Yeah, not losing is more important than winning in that period.
In that period, not just for India, right? That was a thing for lots of teams. Like, yeah. I always find it funny, like when people are arguing against Brian Lara, they'll say things like, he was trying to draw games for his country, like by making these big scores. And I went, yeah, back then that was like seen as a respectable thing. It's now that we look at it going, what the hell? But back then that wasn't seen as like something that was crazy. Lots of players would try and do things like that, right? New Zealand had a whole tour where they went to England where the plan was not to lose a test match and draw all three test matches. I'm pretty sure that they're, if you look at the 1949 New Zealand side, I think they went into some of those games with three bowlers on purpose because they were like, we don't care who bowls because they're not going to bowl us out. That's how we're going to stick in this game. They are not going to bowl us out. So we have seen teams do that before. I think this is too revolutionary for the period that we're talking about. But if we are using today's logic, right, and saying, could you have done this? I think we both of us now would be like, yeah, they probably could have done this on occasion, especially when they were playing teams that probably had weaker bowling lineups, right? If you've got a team coming over with a weak bowling lineup, I think you just say, I don't care if our number six and number seven both average 25. It's going to take you a lot of effort to get through to those number six and number seven with your bowling lineup. And this gives us extra ability to pick different bowlers more weapons. Now, it does go against what we were saying before of maybe in Asia you don't need five bowling options. But it would have allowed for India maybe to have two seamers and three genuine frontline spinners in that period of time. And we'd have to go through. I'm sure there's another one I've
just
forgotten.
Just to be clear,
well.
when we say we don't need, you might not need five bowling options in Asia, we mean on the turning pitches we're seeing in India, not the mega highways of the 2000s, where you might need 10 bowlers to get any wickets.
You might have needed 15 bowlers on some of those wickets, yeah, right?
You might have needed like Glenn McGrath, Joel Garner at their primes.
Yeah.
Let's say Warren Murali and Imran Khan as the fifth bowler to take 20 wickets consistently. That's not the pitches where you compromise on bowling.
No, exactly. That's a very, very good one. So if we look at what? If we look at 1998 to 1999. Sorry, 1998 to 2011. I'll get that right. And we look at Indian bowlers. I'm just having a look at what kind of options that they could have.
So the third spinner, you had Murali Karthik for a while.
I forgot about Murali Karthik. So there's that.
So he plays in the ranked turner in 1KD, that where India beat him by like 13 runs or something.
So there's no, I don't think you can make any argument that is not an international quality bowler, right? So my point being is you've got Pradyumna Oja should have played more games. I know his action is a bit of a concern, but that's fine. Murali Karthik, Sunil Joshi, I don't remember as much. Venkatapati Raju is certainly someone, I don't think he plays that much. He might play three or four. Ramesh Power is another one.
I do not remember Ramesh Power a bit at all.
I wonder if Laxman Shivarajan.
Amit Mishra plays a few.
Amit Mishra is another one.
Laxman Shivarajan, he's like 70s, is he not?
No, he was around, he was 80s, wasn't he?
Was it 70s or 80s? It's definitely not in the 90s or 2000s.
I thought he was still around in the 90s in first class cricket, but I'd have to check. He might not have been by the late 90s anyway, so he probably doesn't qualify. Sunil Joshi was the all-rounder in white ball cricket. I don't remember his test record, so I'm just looking it up here. 15 test matches, 41 wickets at 35. First class wicket cricket, 615 at 25. So he might have played. Yeah, so he could play more. He looks okay. As a player. So they have options available there. And as I said, you want something slightly different to Kumble and Harbhajan. And I think, again, in what we've just said there, we've got some players who are slightly different. Like, do you know what I mean? Well, you want complementary players, I think, in that sort of one. Sivarama Krishnan finishes in first class cricket in 1998. So he just misses this, right? But I think it shows you that you can be more flexible and get more out. I think teams in the future will be more like that, right? Because I think now that we are much more flexible in the way that we think about cricket, and it's much more about winning games. And so you will see that. So I think if you had somehow recreated that Indian side in modern cricket, I think you would risk the odd, right? You know, week number seven or week number six to be able to do that if you have a freakish side. And this is I would argue that this Indian team was a freakish side. They should have been winning more matches than they were, and they weren't because they weren't maximizing their ability to take wickets because of how much batting they had.
Yeah, completely agree with you. Yeah, so another point, like using the power of hindsight that we have, is with the same Indian team, do you think they missed an opportunity by not utilizing Virendra Sehwag the same way the current Australian team are using Travis Head? Where you open with him in Asia, you open with him in Asia and you use him as a five or six in center, right? Let's say in center at that point you'd open with Dravid, you have one of Ganguly or VVS at three. I'd probably have Ganguly at three. I have Sachin at four, Sehwag at five, VVS six, and whatever keeper, Dhoni, Parthiv Patel, Dinesh Karthik, I don't know. Who the hell, someone random keeper there, right? Yeah. Would they not have maximized everyone's batting more at that point. Because I also think that Sourav Ganguly, like, to me, like, we always talk about how some batters think like their position. I think he's one of those people, I'm like, he thinks like his position in a way. Like, even though I think we agree that VVS Lakshman is probably a number four, I don't think he was batting at six thinking like he's a number six. In a way, I think Ganguly does.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN. No, I think that's fair. I think you're right. I had never thought about this before, but we have, England was a team that was much more flexible with their batting, whereas other teams weren't. The Travis Head one, but if you look back to even that period, I know that they ruined Moeen Ali, right? But Johnny Bairstow, Moeen Ali were moving around quite a bit based on conditions as much as anything else, right? The problem with them is they moved them everywhere and they moved them for no reason. But if you have a very strict reason of, and if you went to Sehwag and just said, look, this is why we want to do it. He does okay in Australia, obviously, but he averages about 26, 27 combined against the moving ball in England, South Africa, and New Zealand.
He averages 28 in England, 19 in New Zealand, and 18 in South Africa.
Right.
And 47 in Australia.
So, and Australia doesn't have lateral movement, right? So anywhere where there's lateral movement, he can't play. So you say to him, why don't you just come in at number five? I think that's a really good way of doing it. And again, that's maximizing your talent rather than just saying that you need to. And then you bring in Wasim Jaffer and Akash Chopra and Abhinav McCoy.
Gautam Gambhir after a while.
Yeah, Gautam Gambhir, whoever, right? Mm-hmm. You bring in those players and you say to them, that's your job. Your job is to, you know, nullify the ball so that the better players can come in later. That's all we want you to do. I like it. I really like that idea. I think in general, we use bowlers as specialists and we don't use batters as specialists for conditions.
Don't get me started on that, Jared. You know how I feel about that.
So I think if you and I did that, I think we could go through an entire, like Doug Walters, how many test matches does Doug Walters play in Australia? I reckon, in England. I reckon Doug Walters plays like 15 or 20 test matches in England. Like they just keep sending him back, right? And Doug Walters, fantastic cricketer, right? Clearly could not make runs in England. Like there's, you don't need to be a master analyst to look at it and go, he played 18 test matches in England and averaged 25, right? 18 test matches and he didn't make 100. And Doug Walters is not as good away from home as he is in Australia, but there are places where he does make runs. Like he makes 200s against the West Indies. He makes runs in New Zealand a little bit as well. He's okay in India. Like it's just England where he is absolutely pointless in picking him. Why did they keep taking him? That's 4 Ashes tours, I'm assuming, that he went on, right? What are you thinking? After the first 3, right, what are you thinking is going to happen on the 4th one? And we've seen this over and over again, right, of teams doing this. And so if that was a bowler, you would not have taken Dougie Walters for that 4th tour. We both know that. Yes. So I think there are certain situations where you just know something about a player. And it's worth moving on a little bit, right? I think the problem with specialists is, and having taught the players, they don't like being thought of as specialists, right? Like, I think it was Stuart Meeker when he got picked to bowl in Asian conditions, and he was told by England, "You're like an Asian seamer for us. That's why we're picking you." And he's like, "Great, thank you. I'm very happy to be picked." He goes, "But you do realize I've been bowling in England and taking all these wickets in my career, right? Like I can also bowl in England." And so, yeah, you definitely have a situation there where that's the case. But, yeah, I think that's a very good one with Sehwag and, you know, so, and with Dougie Walters. Take him over as the team mascot if you need him.
So I think with Sehwag, I think there's one test match where they tried for one innings and under the Greg Chappell era, right? I was like, So again, with the Greg Chappell, I think we see the point. He has very good ideas, but he always executes them horribly. So he bats at 7 in South Africa in the first innings, yeah, where Dinesh Karthik and Vasim Jaffer open the batting. He makes 40 or 50 balls. In the second innings, they immediately open, where I think the reason they open with him is because South Africa bat for about 130 overs, and Dinesh Karthik, he bats for 170 balls in the first innings and then keeps for about 128 overs. So he might be too tired to open the batting. So they were onto something. Where they fucked up was having the keeper open the batting. So I think if the keeper was at 7, let's say if DK was at 7 and they had Dravid and Wasim Jaffer opening and you move everyone up 1, let's say, Ganguly at 3, I think they were onto something, Jared. I think I'm just sad we don't see it more often.
Here's another one for you. I don't know why this is so India-centric, despite the fact that we actually have two other stories that are not India coming up.
That's true.
But the India one's quite interesting of... Surely, of all the teams in the history of cricket, Rahul Dravid and Sachin Tendulkar should have moved batting positions more than they did. Rahul Dravid, absolutely made to be an opening batter and could have opened the batting and not even blinked an eye. And Sachin Tendulkar could have batted at 3. Surely there are games and situations where those two should have changed their positions in the order. Four things like Sehwag, right? Four things like an extra bowler to be able to do that. That they just didn't do, Varun. It was like, he's a 3 and he's a 4. It's like, okay, we get that. But again, like that lack of flexibility really doesn't help you as a side, right? Like,
actually defend Armand Dravid here. I think there are times he does open. Sachin just doesn't move.
He does. Don't get me wrong. I'm not having a go at Sachin or Dravid.
I'm definitely having a go at Sachin.
Yeah. But I mean, it might have been Sachin. But my point being is, again, this comes back to the Warren McGrath thing of like, yeah, I get it. They were great. But if you could help them more or you could use their flexibility more, then you're a better side. So why not do it that way, right? It's like the Kumar Sangakkara thing of like, occasionally he's just going to have to take the gloves. We're not saying that Sachin was going to bat at 3 very often, but there are certain games where you need an extra bowler or you need to change the batting order that it would have made more sense. There's nothing in Sachin's game that says he couldn't have made runs at number 3.
Yeah, they move him from opening to number 4 in ODI cricket, but they never thought the inverse in Test cricket.
Yeah.
It's like, that's what I'm confused about. I'm like, the position, that's a format where you shouldn't absolutely not have done that, they did. And the format where it made sense to do that, they never did it. Right. So I think we had great discussion about that. Let's just move to like a slightly earlier era, right? Mm-hmm. South Africa and I guess the all-round deception that they had, where I feel like everyone was an all-rounder in that team, especially if you count the keepers too. They probably fucked up a bit by using Klusner as a frontline bowler. I think same as Simons. It's like no one loves Klusner more than both of us, Jared, especially in ODI cricket. I think we both think as good as he was, I think many people agree he's great. He's still underrated in ODI cricket. It's like, but why? What the hell was he doing as bowling as your frontline bowler in Test cricket?
Yeah, I saw him bowl quite a bit in Test cricket live, and we used to laugh as Australian fans because we were just like, what do they think they're doing with him? Like he would have been a really good fifth bowler. And I suppose their thinking was that there's something about the fact that him and Callis combined were like a joint fourth bowler at times. Does that make sense? Because you have both of them. Yeah,
that's a Brian McMillan too, I think, in that mix.
Yeah, I don't think I know you said they played a couple of test matches together, but I think McMillan might not have been bowling as much by that point in his career anyway. But there was this idea that they could. This was the whole thing with Bob Woolmer's. Bob Woolmer's a genius, right? I've said this before. His book is the most important book in the history of cricket. You know, it's him and C.L.R. James. Those are the two books, one about playing cricket and one about what cricket means, are the two most influential books of all time. But Bob Woolmer had this theory that you could just put players on top of other players and the cumulative total would get better. Whereas like, so you have Lance Klusner, who averages 30 in first-class cricket with the ball, and I'm assuming Jacques Callis, who averages 30 in first-class cricket with the ball. I'm just guessing that off the top of my head, right? Mm-hmm. In test match cricket, do you know what you have? Two guys who average 32 to 33, who both bowl right arm seam. What's the advantage that you get here, right? They both want to bowl with a newish ball. They both want to bowl at the same time. They're different kinds of bowlers. Like, so you could certainly say that Klusner was maybe more of a seamer and Callis was more of a swing bowler. But when you combine them together, Varun, you don't suddenly get a 26 average bowler. Right? Whereas what you and I are saying is, if Klusner bats at 7 Sorry, at 6. So this is the lineup I want to go with. Callis is in at 4, right? We have Klusner at 6. We have Boucher at 7 and Pollock at 8. I would switch that around and I would have had Pollock at 7 and I'd have Boucher at 8 just because I think that Pollock was a better batter than Boucher, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I have the ability to have more three specialist bowlers beyond them, right? So behind Pollock or behind Boucher at 9, 10, and 11, I still have the ability to pick the three best bowlers in the country. So let's say it was Donald. Let's say it was Paul Adams or Pat Simcox. Mm-hmm. Let's say it
Farnie was... Farnie de Villiers.
Would have been Steve Elworthy for a little while. It would have been Intini. You know, whoever that bowler is. I now have three frontline bowlers who are in the side just to bowl. I have Pollock, so I have four frontline bowlers. So yep. I'm not losing anything there. And I still have Klusner and Callis in the side. And what was Klusner's test batting average? Batting at number... what was his test batting average? Do you know?
I don't know. Was it under 30, I imagine?
It was 33, right?
Okay, that's not bad.
What was his first class batting average? It was 43. Because in first class cricket, he's playing as a batter. And in test cricket, he's playing as a bowler. I would argue Sean Pollock's batting average would have been higher if he batted at 7 or 6 as well. Because they would have batted more like... those sorts of players. Now, in our plan, we still have four frontline bowlers, right? With two other all-rounders who can chip in. You now have four frontline bowlers and six bowling at lineup, and you're still batting to number 8. And instead, as you said, when you have Klusner in at number 8, what you actually have is three frontline bowlers and then two all-rounders or three all-rounders when McMillan played, who are all fine, but they're all right-arm seam all-rounders that do basically similar kinds of jobs that don't actually add up to a fourth seamer or a fourth frontline bowler. So I don't see what the point of this lineup was. I think Bob Bulmer just got his sums wrong. And I get it because they'd taken a big chance on Klusner, remember. And remember that as much as you and I love him, they didn't even use him as a frontline batter in ODI cricket, where he's one of the greatest batters of all time.
They used him like Faulkner in ODI cricket, Jared.
It's ridiculous. So in one day cricket, this is so ridiculous to say this number out loud. He ends up averaging 41 in ODI cricket, right? And yet he bats at what, number 8 and number 9 at times after he's a star. Like it's not even as if they change it around. Like, he bats at number 8 more than he bats at number 6, which makes no sense.
Does he come behind Sean Pollock and Boucher in the semi-final?
He does become behind Sean Pollock and Boucher in the semi-final, which, as long as I live, I will never understand the thing there. He bats at number 9 12 times in ODI cricket for no reason at all. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. He averaged 41. They didn't have top-order players who could average 41 in his era. What is Jonty Rhodes' average? 36? Why is he batting behind Jonty Rhodes, Murad? I reckon... we're doing this now. I'm sorry. You've taken me there. I'm going to have to do this. What I said, he averaged 43 in first class cricket, Lance Klusner, right?
I assume that 43 is with the test average bringing it down too, right?
Yeah.
Let's say 45, 46 without the test cricket.
But no. Let's leave test cricket in for a minute. Jonty Rhodes averaged 41 in first class cricket. I watched both of them play. Jonty Rhodes had a much better technique, like a more technically correct player. I never looked at Jonty Rhodes and thought he was a better bat than Lance Klusner in my entire life. Not a single time of what, and I was watching them play over and over again, right? And so they never, so what's the point in Lance Klusner coming lower down the order when the guys above him are averaging roughly the same, right? It just doesn't make any sense. So I think Bob Woolmer, he had this thing of, as I said, he wanted as many bowling options as possible and a batting order that went as low as possible. Whereas I actually think what they should have done with Klusner is they should have meant that they had four frontline bowlers. Klusner allows for four frontline bowlers and batting to number 8, right? And I think that's a That's a hard team to beat, isn't it? If you have four frontline bowlers batting to number eight and two really, or sometimes three, really decent seam options available to you as well as your fifth, sixth, and seventh options, that team is so much better than the actual team that South Africa was using.
I think the only reason they get away with it is because you had Sean Pollock and Alan Donald at the absolute peaks. But so it's like...
Didn't beat Australia.
They didn't beat Australia.
Don't you think our team, and look, this is with hindsight and everything, we know what sort of a player Klusner becomes. They still had in their mind, and Klusner's part of the problem here, that he wasn't a batter, right? They still have that thing that he's not a real batter, right? But I think our team is more likely to beat the Australian team as the Australian team was assembled, not our version of the Australian team. I think our South African team is more likely to beat Australia because that was one thing that Australia always knew, that if they had to go up against Callis and Klusner as that fourth bowler, like, look at the Australian fourth bowlers of that era, right? Even when they had injuries and everything, it's like Paul Rifle, it's Damien Fleming, it's Brett Lee, it's Colin Miller. Like, all of those bowlers are so much better at bowling than Lance Klusner is, right? So much better at bowling than Lance Klusner. And it wasn't that he wasn't a handy bowler. I don't think either of us are going to, like, say he couldn't bowl at all. But he was kind of conditions-based. You know, he had he takes 80 wickets in 49 matches. That's very much fifth bowler. So why is he batting at number eight?
Oh, yeah. So actually, like, now that you mentioned Australia, I forgot to ask you this. Speaking of missed opportunities, is there a missed opportunity that with that Australian team, Brett Lee should have taken the new ball and one of Glenn McGrath or Jason Gillespie should have been first change? Could they have maximized that even more?
It couldn't be Glenn McGrath because he's the greatest new ball bowler in...
I'm not saying... I think could McGrath have done a similar thing to what Cummins has done, where, like, he could be elite, but he's like, let's say it's 10% worse, but...
Did you ever check the 1999 World Cup when he bowled first change?
That's it, but I think Test sport cricket would be slightly different, though.
Yeah, I don't think you move the great. I think there's an argument to be made that he's the greatest new ball bowler in the history of cricket.
I agree.
Right, so I don't think you move him.
That's Gillespie.
Gillespie is much more interesting, right? Because Gillespie is more of a seam bowler, and Brett Lee is more of a swing bowler. So doesn't it make more sense for the swing bowler to take the new ball? I don't think they ever really fully committed to Brett Lee as that kind of a bowler, is maybe the way, you know. The thing with Brett Lee was he didn't really mature as a bowler in Test cricket until the other guys were gone. And maybe some of that is just that when he got the new ball, it's just that's when he became that bowler.
Brett Lee's Test career is so stupid, by the way. I think when he starts, he has like 42 wickets in 7 matches. He's very ordinary for a while. And then there's a period where he takes like 55 wickets in 9 games. He's a weird bowler. So let's just move on from that. I think that was just a quick what-if situation.
I think you're right. I reckon that it'd be interesting to know why that never happened.
That's fair. Maybe Dizzy just didn't want to move, or Brett Lee just, I don't know. Like that team was so good that they could make some tactical blunders and still get away with it because just the quality was so good, right?
As the New Zealanders always say, Australia is quite often the best team and still one of the dumbest.
It makes sense. The more I look into them, the more I agree with the statement, right? So you wanted to talk about Rangana Herath not being bowled more often with Murali.
Yes.
I've done no research on this, so I'll go for it.
So I think the general thought is that Herath comes in and isn't ready when he plays Test cricket originally, and he floats in and out of the side and everything else, right? And his Test record is not particularly good when he's young. I think that's fair. I've got two laptops open at the moment. So if I'm looking over weirdly, it's because I'm looking over at the second one. So can you just look this up for me? When did Murali's last year is 2010, 2011, somewhere around there?
Is it not 8? Am I misremembering?
Oh, it might be 8. It might be 8. I know it's in that sort of period. But so Rangana Herath plays two Test matches in 1999, one in 2000.
Sorry, so you were at 2010 for Murali. Yeah, I don't know why I thought it was 8.
Yeah. So he plays 2 in 99, 1 in 2000, 4 in 2004, 5 in 2005, 2 in 2008, 7 in 2009. So they have 1 year where Herath is used as this second frontline bowler with him, right? But Murali's almost cooked by that. Not cooked, but, you know, he's not the Murali he was before. Up until that point, they have 10 years, right, where they could have used Harrath as just the second spinner. They're two finger spinners, but they spin it in two different ways. There's no reason why you can't play both of them all the way through all those games. And when you go and have a look at his first class record, right? He doesn't average in Sri Lanka. He doesn't average more than 30 in a first class season, right? He has 1 year where it is, where are we here? I think it's just in 2004 and 2005, he doesn't play, he only takes 5 wickets. I'm going to assume he was injured and he averages 35 that year, right? But everywhere else, he's taking, can I give you some of his years, right?
Go for it.
Just to show that this is ridiculous. In 98-99, he gets picked for 2 games, as we said. He takes 48 wickets at 17. Right? In 1999, sorry, that's the wrong year. In 99-2000, he takes 30 wickets at 18. In 2000 and 2001, he takes 72 wickets at 14, right? Oof. In the following summer, he takes 51 wickets at 24. In 2002 to 2003, he takes 38 wickets at 19. The next year, 34 wickets at 27. I'm just trying to see if he has a bad year anywhere. No, those are when he's on tour. Then he comes back to Sri Lanka. He's injured, so we're not too worried about that. He's injured a little bit in the middle here. 05-06, 35 wickets at 21. 06-07, 45 wickets at 18. What am I missing here? What am I missing looking at these numbers? They obviously think he's international quality because they have played him occasionally. How is he just not their second spinner the entire time from 1999 until Murali retires?
Yeah, unless I'm misreading this, like they don't really have a second spinner in that period.
That's my point. He's not even, there isn't Sana another Jayasuriya player.
Has the second most bowled overs along with Murali in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
When put in games Murali has played. So Dharmasena plays for 17 test matches, which I think is, he was probably like before Herat's time, so I think we can acknowledge that. Yeah, Herat only plays 10 test matches, right? Yeah.
So let's have a look. If we go, I can bring this up here too. So from 19, well, what did we say? The end of 2010, let's say, right? So, January 2010. If we look at just Sri Lanka.
Do you know who Niroshan Bandaratilake is?
It's not a name that... did he do good?
Yeah. So he plays seventh... Sorry, wait. What am I looking at? So he plays 6 matches, takes 20 wickets at an average of 27. I think that's 98 to 2001. Might be before Herat.
And
Mendes plays 4 test matches with Murali. Yeah, he's a SLA.
So they're just not picking... They're just not picking spinners because we're going on with Harrath here. And I don't, it's a bit like what we were saying with India before. Like I was picking the spinners that have made it to international level that we are aware of, right? But there isn't, the other argument there is that it's hard to think that Sri Lanka and India aren't producing 2 or 3 international quality spinners fairly regularly, not all the time, but fairly regularly. So I've just brought up all the spinners here. From 1998 to 2009, Murali takes 652 wickets at 21. Just wanted to say that for fun. Harrath plays 21 matches in that period, and he takes 70 wickets at 37. You have Mendes comes in, takes 44 wickets at 29. Chandana takes 37 wickets at 41. Dharmasena takes 27 wickets at 45. And the guy that you said before, Bandaratilake, is it? Okay, read it.
Bandaratilake.
Bandaratilake takes 23 wickets at 30. So even if you say, okay, Harrath, when he came in, didn't take as many test wickets as he wanted, I would still argue that you keep trying him because he's absolutely ridiculous. But let's say it is Bandaratilake, right? Niroshan, Bandaratilake. So let's have a look at his first class record. 177 matches, 573 wickets at 21.
Solid choice.
So again, they have people available. He plays his last first class game in 2009.
Oh, God, so that's much longer than I thought.
So they are just not picking a second spinner for generations, the whole generation. So it doesn't matter if you want Harrath in or not. I think you can justify he should have got more opportunities. Mm-hmm. But they might say, look, we picked him and he didn't take a lot of wickets. But they have another guy here who comes in and plays 7 test matches and takes wickets and just disappears. How are they not playing 2 and 3 spinners consistently at home?
So, yeah, just second. Murali plays in 73 home games. They win 37, lose 14, and draw 22, which is very impressive considering how the hell do you draw that many tests with Murali? So it's almost like, surely that should be like impossible to do, right?
What's their bowling averages? Like, who are the... So, obviously, Vaas plays. So, Chaminda's going to take, what, 30 overs a game, even at home, I would have assumed, right? Yeah. I'm just looking at our man, Bandara Tilake here.
Mm-hmm.
He played one test match in Pakistan and he took 3 wickets, an average of 48. So that doesn't tell us much. He played 6 test matches at home and he took 20 wickets at 27.
Yeah. That's how he plays all 6 with Murali.
So why is he just not playing? What am I missing?
This doesn't make any sense,
does it?
So Murali averages 19.56 at home. So the next best for like a decent sample size would be Vaas, who averages under 26 at home with alongside Murali. Armand Dilara Fernanda averages 26.75.
Yep.
Guru Sinha averages 30. So I think he only takes 5 wickets in 10 tests. I think that's... And then you have Aravinda. Lasith Malling averages 32 in 15 test matches. Okay.
So then, just from what you told me there.
Then you go to Sanath and then it just goes a bit rogue after that.
It sounds like they're using Fernando, Vaas, and Malinga as... Mm. So that sounds like to me they were using multiple seam options, but not multiple spin options.
I think knowing how the teams in the 2000s look, I bet they thought Sanaf Jayasuriya is a very good second spinner, like Aman Behram.
Was Sanaf Jayasuriya a very good second spinner? What was his bowling average in Sri Lanka in that period?
Alongside Murali's 34.72.
And so they've got... 2 left-arm finger spinners, one who's gone on to be a great of the game, and another one who in 6 matches takes 20 wickets at 27. You can't tell me that they wouldn't have done, that they couldn't have used them and Sanath. Yeah. Right? And also, for some of that time, you could have, if Sanath wasn't bowling, Aravinda could have bowled. What was his record in those games?
Who are we talking about, sorry?
Aravinda De Silva.
Aravinda, he took 14 wickets in 32 test matches at 31.
So if you pick another specialist left-arm finger spinner, do you not just give Aravinda the ball a little bit more as your backup off spinner and him and Sanath bowl as the backup, the joint third bowler?
I think Sanath as third spinner, I can see the argument, especially, but that would be an upgrade over like
third spinner.
Or something. Third spinner, really I think, good. Is fair. Yeah. I think I'd take him as third spinner. Second is like pushing it though, isn't it? Like that's crazy. That's lunacy at that point. I don't even know. Like it's weird like when you look back at some teams, it's like maybe a lot of those teams were a bit overrated because that... I feel like surely if you had better bowling plans, you'd exploit the fuck out of that, right? Like, I think if you had better analysts, you'd be like, just make sure Murali doesn't get a wicket at all. Go at like 0 runs per over against him and we'll take everyone else down, right?
Yeah. No, I think it's quite fascinating. So, yeah, so those are the teams that came to mind. If anyone has more...
No, we forgot one. There's one. I think to finish it off. It's Don Bradman and the specialist bowlers theory.
Oh, we did forget that one.
We did leave the best for last. So I think just to give the context, so we were discussing in the group, I was like, best cricketers. I think I'm of the opinion that none of the batters are good cricketers because they're useless. Right? So Jared's like, well, Don Bradman is a very good cricketer because Australia had him. Australia could, let's say, play like some dodgy all-rounders, like a wicketkeeper who couldn't bat because Bradman was making so many runs. And that led into the thinking, if you have a guy who is averaging 100, which is basically almost like 2 players averaging 50, that's 2 elite batters in one. Would you not make an argument that you could have had even like a shit keeper at 6 and 5 genuine bowlers, right? Especially because we're assuming Keith Miller doesn't overlap a lot with Dhawan. Like obviously when you have Keith Miller, you play him Keith Miller as the 5th bowler. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. But interestingly enough, like they play Keith Miller in a really weird role anyway. Like he bats at 5 when I would have said he probably should have come in lower. So here's the big one, right? They don't have a lot of bowling options in the 1930s, Australia. They're not a great bowling lineup, but they do have the world's 2 best bowlers, which is Bill O'Reilly and Clary Grimmett, right? So maybe their thinking is that those guys are going to bowl like 80% of our overs and we don't need that many other options. But outside of the team, Varun, is a guy called Chuck Fleetwood-Smith. Chuck Fleetwood-Smith takes 597 first-class wickets at 22, and he's a left-arm wrist spinner. So it would have meant that they'd have a left-arm wrist spinner, a right-arm wrist spinner, and two right arm wrist spinners in the side, right? And the two right arm wrist spinners are very different to each other as well. They could have easily played Chuck for a lot more. He only played 10 test matches in that period. I don't know if they had extra seamers, but I think you're right. I think that is a perfect example of if you have Bradman in the side, I think you can completely change your structure. And maybe you play, I'm trying to think of some of the players.
So I was just checking. Called, so Keith
Miller Sam Loxton. And
Don Bradman play 15 test matches together. So I was just checking it.
Who was that? Sorry?
Keith Miller and the Don play 15 test matches together. So it must be like, so about less than, about a third of his career then, right?
That would have been mostly after World War II, wouldn't it? Did Keith Miller play any
46 test matches?
46 to 48. Yeah. Okay. So there's another all-rounder I can give you here. There's a guy called Sam Loxton. Sam Loxton plays 12 test matches. He averages 36 with the bat, and he didn't take many wickets in test cricket. He only took 8 wickets at 43. But in first-class cricket, Sam Loxton takes 200 wickets at 25, right? I'd say still a fifth bowling option. You bat him at 6 because he can bat, right? You bat the wicketkeeper who can't bat at all at 7. Mm-hmm. And then you pick Chuck Fleetwood-Smith in as your extra bowler. And Bradman basically overcomes the wicketkeeper and Sam Loxton on his own.
Yes, I think that's fair.
I don't know where Sam Loxton batted for Australia. I reckon he bats at 7 and 8, but I think he's probably better than that. Let's have a look. He bats at 6. So he could bat at 6. So yeah, so you bat him at 6, which is his normal position. You bat the shit wicketkeeper at 7, who's averaging about 20, right? And then you have the ability to do that. There is another all-rounder, I reckon, that they could have picked. Is it Laurie Nash? Laurie Nash was basically kicked out of cricket because he was too nuts and went on to play Aussie rules football instead. Laurie Nash plays 2 test matches. He averages 28 with the bat and 28 with the ball in first-class cricket. So you could have played Laurie Nash at number 7 and had the wicketkeeper at number 8. But they were obviously not going to pick Nash because they thought he was a wild man. But they had, so that means with him and Loxton, you did have the ability to be a little bit more flexible. There's probably another all-rounder as well. I think the other all-rounder is a guy called Colin McCool, one of my favorite names in cricket. But the problem with Colin McCool is, I'm not sure what era he plays in, but I think Colin McCool is another leg spinner. Yeah, he is. So now in that team, you would have 3 leg spinners. So I don't think you can play Colin McCool in that number 8 role, number 7 role as well. But it does show you that they had flexibility again. So if you had Bradman now, right, and you have a good, decent batting order, because it's not Bradman on his own, right? You've got McCabe, you've got Ponsford, you've got Morris, you've got Harvey, all those different guys around them, right? Bill Brown. If you had a good, solid batting lineup now and one of them is Bradman, do you think that's what a team does? And they're willing to be a little bit more flexible to get the fifth bowling up. You basically play Bradman as your all-rounder, right? And then you just go, well, number 7 doesn't matter to us because you're not going to get past Bradman anyway.
Yeah, let's say assuming in the modern keeper would average 35 to 40 with the bat, right? And yep. Like, let's say, I think, do you know who Woodfull is?
Yeah, he's another great.
Sorry, Oldfield is the one I'm thinking of. He's the wicketkeeper in that period.
Yeah, Oldfield, what does he average with the bat? 17?
18.94.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's say if you have the Don now and you have a modern keeper average 35,
yeah,
argument's sake, let's say you have him at 6. Yeah, you definitely could play 5 frontline bowlers, could you not?
Yeah. I think you could still do it because they had Loxton. I think you can play Loxton. You just play Loxton higher, right? You bat him at 6 and then you have the weak number 7 where he averages 20. Right. So what's a number 7 now in world cricket averages about 32, 33, right?
Yeah.
So if you've got Loxton averaging 36 and you've got your number 7 averaging 20, right? And Bradman is averaging 50 more than everyone else, you've still got your runs and now you have your genuine fifth bowler in the lineup. So I think he could do it back then. I think now it's a no-brainer. If you have Bradman, you just use Bradman as the extra batting on his own.
So let's say if the current Australian team had Bradman, what would your lineup be?
Well, I don't know if you change it with your current Australian team because he'd have to overcome so many other holes. Doesn't it have to be a team that's more normal with the bat?
Let's go India then, sure. I'll give you India. Let's go. Let's
is say India Bradman too good?
Is England I don't know. The team? Is India too, Oh, England's a fair shout, actually. Okay. Let's do England, finally. Let's settle on England.
So okay. We bring Bradman in for Pope.
I'll give you a really shitty. What would Bradman do in the West Indies side, Jared?
If Bradman was in the West Indies side, they'd still be almost as shit. That's how bad they are with a bat. Okay, so if he comes in for Pope, right?
Mm-hmm.
You then have Root, Brook, Stokes, Smith, right? So can you use one of those other guys up the order?
Okay.
So the problem is,
let's say you drop Pope and Crawley and you ask the Don to open. I don't know if he would.
I was about to say the same thing. I think you get Bradman to open, don't you, in that side?
Yeah.
So you get Bradman to open.
But then Root won't bat at three. So.
And then you bring in the extra. So you've got Smith at six.
Okay.
Right? Do you use Curran at seven? Or do you bring in a genuine specialist? Do you have Cass at seven or someone like that at seven?
Yeah, you could do.
Or Liam Dawson.
Do you have Liam Dawson at seven? Oh, Liam Dawson's a good shot, yeah.
You have Liam Dawson at seven, right? And then, okay. And
or
then
Ahan you just Ahmed, pick one of those lot.
Yeah, one of those two guys. That's a good one as well. And then you just have four frontline bowlers behind them.
Mm. I wonder if Stokes just ruins this question because he's like, he just gives you a decent fifth bowling option. I think this would be a very interesting question if Stokes was injured.
Yeah. It's better without Stokes, you're right. So maybe South Africa's the best one. So you've got Aidan Markram opening with Rickleton. Okay. So you got Bradman at three, which ahead of Vian Mulder, the other Bradman, right? Which means you move Vian Mulder to seven and Marco Jansen at eight, and you still have you have four frontline bowlers and Vian Mulder.
So in the current team, so South Africa dropped Mulder for a bowler, Muthuswamy anyway, right? If you have Bradman at three instead of, let's say, Stubbs, you could still continue doing that without any change in the batting.
Yeah, right? And your batting's 50 runs much better.
Like much, much better. Maybe 70, I'd argue. But yeah.
So yeah, I think that makes it, that gives you, that. Yeah, you're right, Stokes does ruin it a little bit.
Mm.
So you could definitely, he basically gives you, so if it's India, well, let's go back to the India stuff. So he bats at three ahead of Sai Sudarshan. So that's fine, right? That means that they can pick Kuldeep in every game.
They won't, but they could.
Yeah. But you do, don't you?
Yeah, you could, yeah.
Like you and I, isn't that what we would do? We would have Jadeja at seven and whatever. Who cares who bats at number eight? We don't care if they don't bat at all because Bradman is such a big boom.
Let's say you have Jadeja at six and Washington Sundar and Nitish at seven. You'd have Kuldeep at eight and three seamers, right? That's what you do if you had Bradman at three. You don't need the batting at eight. That's the thing, though. Like I think, as you said, I think India might be slightly too flexible to already do this, so...
But the biggest problem is he is right-handed, so maybe Gambia doesn't pick him.
That's very true, Jared. Yeah, that's very true. That's very
Can't have two right-handers next to each other. All right, I think we're done. Say we had no idea if this would be a 20-minute podcast or an hour podcast, and we went well beyond an hour.
Yeah, I think, as I said, I think we was like, it's either we finish everything in 35 minutes or we spend like 15 minutes on one topic, and we were closer to the latter than the former, let's just say. All right, so as Jared was saying, let us know if there's other missed opportunities you think of, and if we find another one, we'll do a part two.
Let us know if there are missed opportunities.
Yeah, if we find enough missed opportunities, we'll do a part two, Jared. How about that?
There must be, by the way, just to whisper this, there must be ones with Imran Khan and Pakistan, and there must be ones with Sobers and West Indies. There must be. That we just didn't think about, but I reckon there would be. Both of them as well? Anyway, sorry.
All right. So thank you so much, guys. I think we'll see you in the next one. Subscribe to goodareas.co. It's got everything with us. We'll see you in the next time. Bye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes.
Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.